person. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right. This is Mark Sitko. Welcome to Next Fan Up. We are the super fans. You're here for this show. It is the NFC East roundup, kind of the off-season roundup. We only have three of the super fans with us from the NFC East right now. Myself, Mark Sitko. We also have our Redskins super fan and our Cowboys super fan. Before I get to them, I'm going to introduce them in 1 second. I just want to let you know how you can reach out to us. If you want to send in any of your questions, if you want to talk with us about any things we have to say here, please reach out. On Twitter, we are at NFU Podcast. You can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And also on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We'd love to hear from all of you. This is a podcast for the fans, about the fans. We are basically a group of 32 people that came together. We're all very hardcore into our teams, and we like to talk football. And we've been brought together by Pod Vader, the amazing producer, to put on this show. And yeah, this week we're looking at just the NFC East. So to kick us off, first I'd like to just introduce our other super fans. Brian, can you tell us a little about the Dallas Cowboys?
What's going on, Mark? Them boys, we are in the house, and I've got my hat on forward today, so I'm gonna try and keep it mature with you guys. But never know, in the NFC East might have to flip it around backwards at some point.
Nice. And Drew is our Redskins superman. Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Not bad, Mark. Drew Marusak live from Leesburg, Virginia, approximately 10 minutes from Redskin Park in Ashburn, Virginia.
Home. Nice.
So,
how many games do you get to see a year out there? I'm so jealous.
I see about, I go to maybe 1-2 home games. I do make a point, though, to go to 1 away game. I was in Dallas last year for the win. Yeah, so that was always nice. But we've got a buddy and I, we do a road trip every year and hit one away game. It started off very promising 2 years ago when we saw RG3 in the opener in New Orleans. And that, you know, kind of shook the whole NFL by his performance. And ever since then, it's just been a decline.
Brian, you're in Dallas as well. I'm in Angeles, so I'm nowhere near my home team of the Eagles. But you in Dallas, do you get a chance to see games out there, Brian?
Well, you know, Jerry doesn't like to keep it cheap, so my finances being what they are, I do my best to try and go to one game a year. Didn't get to make it to one last year. The last one I went to was the Vikings game when they came to Dallas, which will be apropos considering one of the topics I'm sure we're going to get into at some point.
Nice. Well, awesome, guys. I'm glad to have you guys here. This is going to be a lot of fun. To start off, I had a chance on the first podcast to kind of go over what the Eagles did in the offseason. We've had a crazy offseason under Chip. But just to get you guys caught up and kind of talking about those things, let's start with Drew. If you want to just tell us a little bit about the major moves this offseason, what are you excited about that the Redskins did? Just give us a little bit about what's happening in the offseason.
I think there's been some big excitement on the Redskins side. I think, you know, one of the things is we didn't sign a Arakpo back. I know the perception around the league was that he was a little bit better than he is. The reality is he didn't produce. He was out half the year last year. Another torn pectoral muscle for the second time in his career, and he had one sack up to that point. A guy that talks a lot. Produces very little. I think our owner in the past would fall in love with the name, and it's probably fallen in love with names, probably still fallen in love with names. But I think it's very tempting to look at that guy physically and say, hey, let's sign him. They didn't do it. They cut him loose, which is great. They also cut loose Barry Colfield, which was an aging veteran guy that just couldn't stay healthy. Stephen Bowen, another guy, aging, former Cowboy, couldn't stay healthy. When they were healthy, they were good, but, hey, it's kind of what have you done for me lately. That freed up some big salary room. With that, they got, let's just call him Pot Roast, Knighton, big defensive tackle, nose guard. I think he's going to be good. He's aggressive. They signed him to a one-year deal. I think his weight was a big concern. So they did something smart. They said, hey, let's do a one-year show-me deal. See what you can do here. I think they've also made major improvements in the secondary. They did, picked up Culliver, which is another good pickup. Didn't overpay for him. But they did probably pay for him a little heavier than what you would or what you would expect from him. But they needed a cornerback. I think he's a good guy, not off the field, but on the field he produces. Not a big tackler, but he's really good on defending the ball and top receivers. I think he's going to complement our rookie from last year, Breland, who kind of came out of nowhere, was a third or fourth round pick, and was on the field a lot this year and really did a good job. And then we signed two safeties. I got Johnson, who was a backup out of Seattle, very good guy against the run. And then Golston, we'll see. Maybe it was Lovie Smith not using him right with the Tampa 2 down in Tampa. And we'll see how he performs. But I think they got him for a reasonable mark. They ended up giving a sixth and a seventh round pick for a guy. And they had Tampa eat some of that salary. So it looks like with our new general manager, Scott McGloin, that they're actually making football moves and doing things a little bit smarter instead of, having a guy that's a fantasy owner make the decisions.
No, for sure. And I thought Goldson and Culliver, both amazing pickups there. In the sense, I've watched your backfield for a couple of years and the struggles that they've had, really only Hall being the one kind of shining player on that team in that back four. And now to see, you've been building that up, I think is good. Just a side question, what do you think about Colt McCoy being re-signed? Were you happy about that? Tell us a little bit about that, where you see, obviously, quarterbacks, I think something we're going to talk about with your team in a second, but tell me a little bit about that. How do you feel about McCoy?
Colt McCoy is a serviceable guy. I don't think he's a starter by any means, but I think at this point, he still has to make the team and make the roster, and I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm sure we can talk about the draft later, but I'm not going to be surprised if they don't pull the trigger even in the second round or third round. I don't think a first round quarterback's an option, but I think a second round or third rounder, then you've got one of the three guys that aren't going to be there anymore. And McCoy, I feel it maybe is a second or third stringer. So I think if they pull the trigger on a second or third round quarterback, I think one of the two guys are gone, and that being Cousins and RG3.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Brian, tell us a little bit about the Cowboys offseason. Obviously, it's been very busy. What have you liked? What have you not liked?
Certainly, we've grabbed a lot of headlines for the moves we've made. But I think, for me, the biggest move that the Cowboys had was the move they didn't make, and that was not bringing back DeMarco Murray. I think they had a plan in mind of how they wanted to negotiate with him, and I think it worked to a T. He was getting offers from Jacksonville and Oakland where there were more money, but it was obvious DeMarco wasn't going to go to a team that wasn't a contender. And it really looked for the longest time like we'd be able to get him back for that $5-6 million a year range, maybe over 4 years. And I was perfectly okay with that. Of course, your Eagles came in, dropped the 5 years, the $42 million. And at that point, I'm okay letting him walk. He's a 27-year-old running back who just had nearly 400 carries last season. He's been injury-prone. Last season was really the only season that he stayed healthy. To give that kind of running back that much money in today's NFL, I don't think was a fiscally responsible move for Jerry and Stephen Jones, and I was happy to see that they parted ways with him. That's tough. He's a great talent. You're going to enjoy having him, Mark. But at that price, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now, you might look back on that deal and kind of shake your head and, have a little buyer's remorse. So I'm happy that we didn't make that move. We brought in Darren McFadden. Darren McFadden is not going to be DeMarco Murray. He's not going to be the workhorse. We're not going to be giving him 300 carries. He's designed to be a complimentary piece. And at that level and for the price we got him, I am perfectly okay with that. I think that's exactly what he can be. Again, he has some health issues of his own, but McFadden is not going to be the Murray replacement. He's going to be a part of the Murray replacement. Of course, the other big move that we talked about last time I was on the podcast was the Greg Hardy signing. Again, personal feelings somewhat aside, I get everyone's resistance because of what he's done with the domestic violence and his off-the-field issues going back to college and even high school. He's an out there dude, and certainly with the domestic violence, I understand people poo-pooing that move. From purely a football standpoint, it was a great signing because we need someone to pressure the quarterback. We got less than 15 sacks from our D-line last year, and Greg Hardy's last full season, that's what he put up with, 15 sacks. We needed someone to pressure the quarterback, and we have him on a one-year, very team-friendly deal that's going to pay him basically per game. So I like that move. I also like who we decided to bring back. Rolando McClain was one guy. He was sitting out there for a while, and I was a little nervous. I wanted to see him come back again. He has some off-the-field concerns. You worry about his dedication. The entire issue with his house being burnt down, with all the question marks surrounding that. The market really wasn't there for Rolando McClain that I thought would be there. Really only the Patriots were the only other team you heard in the market for McClain. So I'm glad the Cowboys brought him back. Gave him a one-year deal, again, kind of a prove-it deal as well. But to supplement that, they also went out and got three more linebackers because we had all sorts of issues with our depth last year. We had guys coming in, Justin Durant, Bruce Carter, who played very well. They are now gone, and we needed to fill that depth. So we got Andrew Gatkar, Jasper Brinkley, Keith Rivers. So we now have a solid core of linebackers. As well as bringing back Doug Free. I know the big decision here on the O-line was Doug Free versus Jeremy Parnell. The fact that we were able to bring Doug Free back for 3 years and $15 million, while Jacksonville signed Parnell, who was an inferior player, for $32 million, again, it shows that responsibility in the wallet that we've been wanting to see for years. And then finally, can't go an off-season move recap without talking about the Dez Bryant situation. Franchised him. I think everyone knew it was coming. The question now is, will he sign a long-term deal before June? I'm sticking to my guns. I don't see it happening. I really see him playing this year under the franchise contract. I don't think Dallas wants to commit long-term to Dez Bryant at this point. They want to make sure that, you know, he's got his head on his shoulders, give him another reason to motivate to see that production that we saw last year when he was a top three receiver in the NFL. So overall, the moral of the story in Dallas has been being very wise with the spending. We're seeing that Jerry Jones isn't single-handedly controlling the ship. He's definitely got Stephen Jones in his ear helping out. So I, for one, have been very pleased with where they have spent their money and where they have decided to save their money.
No, nice. I think Dez Bryant is a really interesting question there for me. Where do you rank him if you had to put him in the wide receivers? I mean, obviously, I think it's undeniable, right? He's at least a top 10. Where do you think he sits? Where would you place him if you're going to rank Dez against the rest of the league at wide receiver?
Well, if I'm ranking Dez against the rest of the league, I have to say I'm a little biased. I did go to the same college as Calvin Johnson at the same time he was there. So I might be a little biased. I still think he's the best receiver, but of course he's had those health issues. He can't stay on the field for all 16 games. Personally, I think Antonio Bryant, you know, is still underrated. I don't know how, but still after last year, maybe people look at his size and think he's not up to par with some of the bigger, more physical receivers. He's everything I would want in a receiver. And I think Dez Bryant, I think he's right there. I think he's, you know, in that top three, top five level, and he's surpassed, you know, the Larry Fitzgeralds of the world. I think he's above a guy like a Jordy Nelson. I put him on par with, like, Julio Jones. I think those two are even at this point, you know, top three, top five guys. And I continue to think that Dez Bryant is going to put up numbers like this for at least the next 2 or 3 years.
No, more than that, I think. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I hate him, and I don't like your team, but I would have to say he's top five. I definitely agree with you, and I think you'll get at least 5 years out of him. As long as, you know, who knows, major injuries, knees and things can happen, but otherwise, I think he's, yeah, and I love his fire, man. He fights so hard for it, and he wants to win so bad. I really respect that in him. As much as I don't like the guy, he really is impressive. I think he's going to replace Witten for me. I always, for a long time, hated Witten, but would take him on my team in a second. And I think Dez is now that guy where I'm just like, oh, I hate him so much. But if he wanted to be an Eagle, come on over. Even more than DeMarco. We're stoked to have DeMarco, but I would have been really stoked for that. For our offseason moves, like I said, I went over it on the last podcast, but kind of the bottom line is the defense clearly is better because our cornerbacks were totally garbage last year. Kerry Williams, we got out of there. He's okay. We were just overpaying him, and he's not a number one. And then we got rid of also Brandon Fletcher, who I do think is the worst cornerback in the league. One of them. He's like bottom five if we were doing the whole comparison thing of a starting cornerback in the league. Just truly wretched and just not athletic enough to cover on the outside. Although he's trying so hard. I don't mean to be harsh. All these guys are amazing athletes. I just think he's at the end of his time in the NFL. And so the defense is getting much stronger. Having Walter Thurman on one side is, you know, that's fine. He'll compete with a couple other guys. Having Maxwell on the other side is great. We still have a big hole at safety that we will try to address, but the defense is stronger. Kiko Alonso will just bolster the middle of the defense. The front seven is actually not so bad already. Losing Trent Cole is a bit of a shame, but Trent Cole was, you know, he's been there a long time. It was just time. I think they weren't willing to pay him what somebody else will, and I think he'll do great with the Colts. The defense got better. The offense, I mean, we'll see. Totally blew it up. So, I mean, who knows? If Bradford breaks a knee in week one, I mean, it's all for naught. But I think the run game will actually be stronger with having two strong power running backs. And, you know, on offense, we have no offensive weapons that I'm very excited about. I like Jordan Matthews, but it's literally his second year, and he's young, and we'll see. Other than that, Huff scares me a lot. And Cooper, just not really a fan. So we have to see what we can do on those weapons, and we'll see what Bradford can do. And then maybe the almighty Sanchez will have to come in and finish our season 500 again like he did last year. So that's kind of our offseason. Going backwards, let's go back, start off with the Cowboys. What do you see as your major holes now, Brian? Like, if you looking at the draft and our last waning moments of free agents that we have left, what holes do you still want to see filled by training camp?
I think the biggest hole for sure on our team is the one where we've had the most misses these last couple years, and that's at cornerback. We have that terrible Brandon Carr $50 million contract still sitting over our head. There's a chance we cut him. We wouldn't save a lot of money in the long run, so I think he actually ends up playing out this season because he's already said he's not taking a pay cut. But Brandon Carr, and then also Morris Claiborne, who was arguably the biggest draft bust in Cowboys history, considering where we drafted him at and what we had to give up to get him. We need some help in our defensive backfield. Orlando Scandrick has been very good, but he's better suited to play on the inside. We need someone who can play on the outside and match up with those bigger physical wide receivers that we were talking about earlier. Then obviously with DeMarco's departure, we still have to take hold of running back. As of right now, Adrian Peterson is still a Viking. We don't know necessarily if that'll be the case a week from now or at draft time. Still very much up in the air. But we need to fill our running back position. Like I said, between McFadden and Ryan Williams and Joseph Randall, we can piece it together, but that's not very many pieces to work with. So we're going to have to go get another running back either in the draft if we don't get Adrian Peterson. And then finally, our defensive line. Getting Hardy was great. Having DeMarcus Lawrence, hopefully for the entire year this year, will help us on the end, but we still need defensive end play for sure. I still think Greg Hardy is just a one-year rental. I don't think he'll be here in the future. And then we also need a ton of help in the middle. Our defensive tackle position it's a bunch of guys who try really hard and have a lot of effort, but there's not a lot of talent there with Tyrone Crawford and Nick Hayden, and then bringing Josh Brent back into the fold. We just don't have the talent up the middle, so we definitely need to hit our D-line in this draft as well.
Awesome. Hold on one second, Brian. Thank you so much. I'm going to bring in our other super fan. He actually is just finally available. This is the Giants super fan. One sec. Hey, are you there, Samuel?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. How you doing, buddy?
How's it going? Finally got through airport security lines, and I'm ready to go.
Awesome, man. We appreciate it. We're kind of in the middle of things right now. We had just gotten through. We're looking at holes kind of left on each of the teams, and we were just talking with Dallas. I'm going to do the Redskins holes, and then I'm going to come right back to you, Samuel, and I'll ask you a couple questions to get you caught up. Drew, what are some of the holes? Thanks, man. Drew, what are some of the holes that you have on the Redskins that you'd love to see filled through draft or the remainder of free agency?
Yeah, I look at kind of globally as a team. There's still the depth issue. They haven't drafted well over the years. When they have drafts, you know, draft picks over the past, like, you know, 6-7 years, they still haven't had a lot of hits in the later rounds. You know, the teams that have had those hits in the later rounds are the ones that are consistently, you know, at least playing, at the very least, 500 football, which the Redskins even haven't been able to do that. But on the defensive side of the ball, you know, I still think we need to find an answer at middle linebacker. I think Keenan Robinson's a great young guy, but Riley Perry, who is a young guy as well, just hasn't been able to, you know, you don't know what the defensive calls are, or what the coordination is, and what the assignments are. But as a fan, it looks really poor. He's definitely behind steps on the tight ends. He can't cover the tight ends. He's not fast enough, and you know, I don't need to know what the coverage is to determine that he's, you know, 3 or 4 steps behind a tight end and constantly out of position. So I think that's a big weakness that we have there that we still need to fill. Offensive-wise, line, you know, we've drafted guys, 3rd, 4th round, can't get on the field. Obviously, there's some issues at the talent search for that positions because every other team has 3rd and 4th round offensive linemen that are playing in the NFL. We can't do it. We've changed the, you know, blocking scheme, I think, with Callahan now. You're going to see what they've done in Dallas, bigger, more powerful guys that are pushing kind of old Redskin football. And while we were successful running the ball with the zone scheme, it's a different offensive line group. It's a smaller group. They're zone blocking. You know, they're moving a lot. And, you know, really smaller athletic guys. And now we're kind of in a hybrid between that old regime's line versus what we're going to be building here offensively. And then you got to look at, you know, receiver-wise, you know, I'm happy with that. I see, you know, we've got, you know, DeSean Jackson, say what you want. The guy's a playmaker. He's a flake off, you know, a bit of a flake and takes plays off. But when he has position, gets the ball, the guy does make plays. He's still the deadliest guy we have on our offense. You know, Pierre Garçon, another guy that's a powerful guy, tough guy. You know, I think, you know, they got to find ways to get him the ball. He's just a brutal force when he's out there. And, you know, ultimately we've got to find a quarterback. We don't have it on the roster yet. I think we've got, you know, we threw all the chips in on a guy that can't read defensives and can't release the ball. You know, when I talked about the line play earlier, the line didn't have the problems even with Cousins or Colt McCoy in there because they were getting rid of the ball. They knew where to go with it. They knew how to read defenses. RG3 holds the ball. He backpedals. You know, your line blocking, when you're a tackle, they teach you to feather on the blocking side, and this guy's just rolling right into it. So the line, not as bad as what people say. When your quarterback, though, is drifting into where the offensive line are trained and taught to push instead of stepping up in the pocket and making plays, you know, it looks a whole lot worse than it is. So I look to get some help there. But, you know, until they get the quarterback position resolved and set and kind of have a direction that they can go to. And I think that's probably 90% of the teams in the league. But we're in the same boat. We're not going to go anywhere until that gets resolved.
For sure, for sure. No, and trust me, I feel very much in that same boat with you right now. The Eagles, you know, the quarterback, we'll see. You know, we'll see how we shake out. There are other couple needs that we really are looking for is we need somebody to fill the other safety spot opposite Jenkins. We need some wide receiver depth. A starting number one would be great. I don't know where you just find one of those in the draft. Maybe we'll find somebody who can grow into that. We'll see. And then really the other place is at guard. We dropped Todd Harriman, who's an amazing guard. He went to the Colts. He'll still play well for a little while. He was at, you know, the end of his career in Philly. And we need to find somebody young who can fill in there. We have a guy, Alan Barbre, who's good. And he filled in a lot last year, and he'll be fine. But I'd love to see somebody young drafted to kind of compete there at the guard spot. To open up to Samuel, our Giants superfan. Samuel, before we hit holes with you, I'm going to go even back a little further. Let's start just off-season moves. Tell us a little bit about what the Giants did this off-season. What did you like? What did you not like? How are you feeling about the moves so far?
Well, the Giants had a very interesting off-season. They had a couple of moves I liked, a couple moves I didn't. The one move I think that's going to help them the most this offseason was bringing in Shane Vereen. Bob McAdoo's offense, you know, Aaron Rodgers always had that quick release, whether it was Cobb or the collection of running backs they had. And the Giants were really missing that last year with Rashad Jennings and Andre Williams. Both really couldn't catch the ball out of the backfield and make any moves. And I think bringing in Shane Vereen really will help Eli Manning deal with some pressure to deal with their horrendous offensive line and just another weapon for him to have. Beyond that, we gave some ridiculous contracts out, brought in a linebacker that I previously hadn't heard of, JT Thomas from Jacksonville, and gave a ton of guaranteed money. We did the same with Dwayne Harris. So, you know, a couple of moves that are puzzling, but overall, I don't think we addressed the needs that we had. I mean, our safeties starting right now are Stevie Brown and Nate Berhe, which, I mean, if you haven't heard of them, I wouldn't blame you. So, you know, it was an offseason where I think they ignored a lot of the obvious needs they had, kind of went after players that, you know, they hoped would become real contributors to the team. But, you know, we brought back Jason Pierre-Paul on a franchise tag just to give us another year to look at him. He's a perplexing player. He, you know, on his good days, he's one of the best defensive ends in the league, but he can just disappear for games at a time. So, you know, they still have a lot of work to do. I don't think they're done, but, you know, being a Giants fan isn't easy these days.
And so, with all that being said, if you had holes left that you still want to fill with this draft in the free agency, what are your three biggest holes, the three things you want to try to address?
Well, the three biggest holes, I think, obviously, safety. That's a tough position to address in the draft. I know that in the past, a lot of safeties haven't really panned out from college to the NFL. And looking at this year's draft, there's one elite safety and then a huge drop-off. So that's definitely one position, maybe in the later round, maybe a couple of flyers on some safeties. Second biggest need, I guess, would have to be offensive line. I mean, we have four starters right now, if you want to call them that, but Eli Manning can't deal with pressure these days, and any hopes of us winning will be Eli Manning being able to get rid of the ball and into the hands of our receivers, definitely align them. And then after that, what's been plaguing the Giants for the last couple of years is those linebackers. Tight end, anybody out of the backfield just kills us. Eagles fans will know that Sean McCoy just carves up this team. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things that I think the Giants haven't taken a linebacker in the first round in 15 years. So we don't have a lot of talent there. We relied on Antonio Pierce for a little bit, but that was toward the end of his career where he was more an asset for his mind and not for his physical play. And, you know, since then we really haven't had any linebackers that make a difference on the field.
No, thanks. That's great. Awesome, Samuel. Hold on
Mark,
one second.
Mark, can I interrupt for one second?
Go ahead.
I can't feel sorry for him, for he said it's been rough to be a Giants fan over the past few years. You're the only one that's winning Super Bowls in this division. So. I don't feel bad for you. I'm in a 20-year victory. So.
Yeah, well, I guess it's more frustrating knowing that we've won Super Bowls and now our team is just, you know, horrendous.
I don't know about that's so interesting to say horrendous. I just have respect for Coughlin, Eli, and obviously your new offensive weapon, ODB, as I like to call him.
Oh yeah, I called him before, like, and I heard our Dallas superfan saying he thought as Bryant was up there with the best receivers. I just think Odell Beckham's the best receiver ever played football. I'm just going to let that
be known. That's great. I don't know about that quite yet, but I definitely have bad respect. And especially with our old quarterbacks, I would be so afraid of him. So, Brian, going back, let's look at now if we go towards the draft. Looking at the draft and where you guys are picking, tell us a little bit about where do you think Dallas might go? Where are they looking? What players intrigue you the most and do you hope fall to you at that spot or that you'd be willing to move up for?
Certainly, we have enough needs where I don't think we need to be moving up anywhere. With most teams, it seems like everyone's going to be trying to move back in the latter half of the first round. I'm going to throw this out there first and foremost. We don't need to be going after a running back in the first round. I don't imagine Todd Gurley's going to be there. He would be the one that I would consider. But I don't imagine at 27 he's going to be sitting there. So I hope Cowboys fans, get it out of your mind that we're going to have Melvin Gordon at 27. We have been more pressing needs, and I've been adamant about this. We don't need to go running back in round one. We need to go either cornerback or D-tackle. My preference is cornerback. I think there's a couple good guys to target up there. I imagine Trey Waynes will be long gone, but Kevin Johnson, Marcus Peters, Byron Jones, a bunch of long, athletic cornerbacks. Like I said, we need guys on the outside to cover these bigger receivers. So I'd like to see us go cornerback. If we don't go corner, D-tackle, Malcolm Brown out of Texas. I wonder if Jerry's going to be tempted to pull the trigger on the local guy. So Malcolm Brown, or a favorite of mine is Eddie Goldman out of Florida State. I think both of those guys would fill a huge gap that we have in the middle of stopping the run game. Again, we could go DNs in round one as well. Eli Harold out of Virginia, I like. I'm going to try not to butcher this name too bad. Odikizua out of UCLA. I hope I didn't mispronounce the name too bad. A couple good targets. But again, I think cornerback, D-tackle are where we need to be looking in round one. If we don't end up with Peterson, I'm more than happy going after some of these round two running backs. Kevin Coleman, Jay Ajayi, he's a local product from here in Frisco. Even further on down the draft, Amir Abdullah, TJ Yeldon would be a guy I would love to see here as a third round pick if we can get him. And then again, a couple later round, got Jordan Phillips out of Oklahoma, the D-tackle. I think if he slips to us in round two, would be a fantastic pick. And then Daniil Hunter, the DN out of LSU, a good target in the second round. But I'll reiterate, Cowboys fans, we don't want to go running back in round one. Get it out of your mind. Let's move past it.
I like it. I agree. No round one running backs. Even Gurley. I don't think any. I trust Kuiper with this. I say no running backs in first round. Drew, pick six. You can take a running back at number six. I'd be very happy with that. But what would you like to take as your number six pick? What are you looking at?
Mark, first of all, don't ever joke about that again, because we might do that if you say something like that. You know, it starts with, you know, we need a speed rusher. I think Dante Fowler has got to be our target outside linebacker. I think that's got to be the first round pick. I know the offensive line is heavy this year in the draft. You know, the Redskins could target something then. If they don't, if they can't get Fowler, maybe they're trading back, and then at that point collecting picks and going from there. And I think the main address, though, has got to be outside linebacker, and then it's got to be offensive line. That's really what's going to be the key to the draft. You know, we've got a general manager now, McLuhan, that actually is great at evaluating players. I don't care if he's drinking or not. As long as he's picking players the way that he's done in San Francisco or Seattle, I'll personally, you know, buy him a few more drinks if that keeps him keeps his edge. That's where I look for the Redskins to go this year. I don't buy the Mariota thing. I don't think that's going to happen. First of all, I don't think he's going to still be on the board by then. The only other option would be, to leverage that if he is available to get someone else. So, mm-hmm. I see a quarterback in the late rounds, but early on the defensive and outside linebacker scenario, first round, second round line.
Nice. I'm going to hop over to Samuel now. Samuel, when you're looking at the draft, what are your picks that seem like the best fits?
Well, picking at number nine this year it's a little weird to me because positions that the Giants need, there are no elite prospects. On the offensive line, the one name that keeps popping up is Scherf. Hope I'm pronouncing that right, but he kind of, the things that scouts are saying about him, his deficiencies are the same things the scouts said about Justin Pugh, and those things have really limited Justin Pugh, so I'm not excited about that pick. Looking further, all the offensive linemen linebackers that I would want, I think are going to be gone. You know, Beasley and Fowler are two that I would love to have on this team, but I think they're going to be way gone. Beyond that, I honestly think that, you know, with Victor Cruz being out, I think if one of those top two wide receivers drop to the Giants, you know, let's load up on that offense, let's give Eli Manning his weapon, and then, you know, address the rest of the needs in the later in the round, either Kevin White or Amari Cooper, who
I think Cooper hasn't been talked about enough. You know, during the regular season in college football, he was everybody was on the Cooper bandwagon. But since, you know, the combine when Kevin White and Rashad Perriman blew everybody away, Cooper's name hasn't been in it, you know, hasn't been in the discussion as much. But again, those two I don't think are going to drop. So really, I'm hoping that the Giants trade back, you know, maybe pick up Landon Collins if they can trade back in the middle of the first round. Somebody's available on the board that somebody else wants to trade up to. But the number nine pick is there's no real top 10 prospects left, in my mind at least. There's like a clear top six, and then everybody else is a mid to late first round talent. Moving later in the draft, I love Shaq Thompson out of Washington. You know, he's a linebacker that has speed. He can play safety. He would solve a lot of the Giants' problems, replacing Antrell Roll, who we lost in the offseason. He can guard tight ends. He can guard running backs coming out of the backfield. He's somebody that I'm super interested in. So, you know, if the Giants could trade that number nine pick, move back into the draft, accumulate some picks, and, you know, pick up Landon Collins, pick up Shaq Thompson, or somebody in that mold, or even, you know, trade back into the end of the first round and pick one of the project linemen like Lael Collins or Eric Flowers. You know, those are some things that I'd be interested in. But as long as it's not a running back, like everybody's been saying, but I don't see the Giants taking anybody near the running back. So, you know, it's really going to depend what the other teams are doing in front of them, or what the Giants are going to do with that pick.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, when it comes to the Eagles, the wide receivers, like we're looking at wide receivers as well. Obviously, as Macklin has left us, we very much have a void there. And I like Perriman. I'm a little nervous. It seems that he's just kind of skyrocketed up the charts, and that always worries me. I was just listening to McShay today talking about the fact that he dropped something like 14% of his passes, which just scares me. If there's anything I hate, it's drops. But apparently he had a bad quarterback. I don't know college well, so maybe that's bad throws. Who knows where that exactly lies. For offensive linemen, if Scherf would fall down to 20, I would take him. I would run up and grab him. He's my favorite offensive lineman. I love watching him just kick ass. He is an amazing force. A couple of the other offensive linemen, I think it would be smart to take him because I think there's going to be a run on them and it's not going to go as deep. Wide receiver might go deeper, and I don't know if we're going to get, like you were saying, one of those elite wide receivers. So maybe we wait till the second round and see if we can get an Al-Ghahar. It's so hard to know where these people will actually go. There's so many strong wide receivers this year. I don't trust that the ones I love will make it to the second round. I think all the ones that we all love, we all kind of all secretly love our certain ones, but those guys are probably all going to go in the first, knowing this league. So it's very dangerous. The wide receiver, it's like a dance between wide receiver, offensive line, and like I said, we still could use some cornerbacks and safety depth. I like Landon Collins a lot. I would love him there. A lot of people are saying in Philly they don't like him because he's not able to do a versatile thing, that he's really more like a Cam Chancellor and plays down in the box type of safety. I think that works really well in Seattle. Not to say that Jenkins is the same as Earl Thomas, but still – Yes, it would be great to have two safeties that can do it all, hit people, cover, and everything. I just think that's really rare in the NFL. I think it's rare to have one of those safeties, and we have a kind of one who's pretty good, Jenkins. So I don't mind pairing it against the best safety in the draft if he's not super safety. That doesn't bother me. I just want a solid safety, man. It's been so long. I mean, all of us who know Dawkins in Philly, it's just been so hard. It's really the curse. I think I'm literally going to start calling it that. Banner not paying Dawkins and letting him go to Denver has cursed us. And Jenkins is the closest thing we've had to like a starting safety since then. Michaels was great for a little while, but long time ago. The next section we want to go into, guys, is do any of you guys have questions for one another? You know, for the other super fans in your division, any questions you have about what they did in the offseason, anything you want to ask them about?
I'll hop in here. Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Hello? One thing about being a Giant fan that I love during our Super Bowl seasons was having some sort of dominant unit. And I just want to kind of get the Dallas fans' thought on that offensive line because I know it scares the crap out of me because I've never seen somebody like Tyron Smith just stand up elite defensive ends over and over again. And it's incredible to watch. I want to know, you know, did they lose anybody? Did they gain anybody? And what's your thoughts on moving forward on having like that dominant of a unit?
No, we talked about the fact that we're going to have some continuity, that we're bringing back all five starters across that line. You have no idea the amount of pride that the Metroplex takes in being able to walk into any stadium, Seattle especially, and just send that offensive line out there and ram it down someone's throat. Oh, my goodness, what a great feeling that is to just watch that. And know you can count on that game after game after game. And what it's done is it's helped Tony Romo out. I'm the biggest Romo fan you'll find. I love him. I love his career. I think he's been underrated for the majority of it. He's finally now starting to get the respect he deserves. But it's all a function of this running game. And we all know running games travel just like defenses travel. To know we can go into any stadium and to, you know, just run it down someone's throat. I was so happy that they kept Doug free, that they kept this group intact. I'm not so much worried about who's behind them, whether it's McFadden or Murray or whoever we might draft or Peterson. But the fact that we can bring that group with us, I hope we have that group intact for another 3 years just to see what they can become. Tyron Smith has become one of my favorite players, and I never thought an O-lineman would become one of my favorite players. It's just a physical beast he is out there. It's nice to have that anchor after, like you said, seeing the Giants dominant on O-line and D-line. Now, if we can get that D-line figured out, we'll be right there with y'all. But, yeah, to have that dominant unit is a huge source of pride here, and it's something we know we can rely on for years to come.
Nice. Yeah, I also am in awe of that offensive line. We had a good one going for a little while, but that thing you guys have going there is a beast. Very impressive. Redskins fan, Drew, I have a question for you. Is RG3 the QB of the future? Hearing what you said earlier, I think the answer is probably not. And my other, I guess the secondary to that is, will Gruden survive RG3? How does this play out? How do you see that going?
Man, I wish he was. I really do. I think everyone in town here wanted him to be it. They got caught up in the RG3 show beginning. But, you know, I had doubts about his just ability to be around a locker room setting. He just seems like the guy that's really narcissistic, all about him. And I think when you have that mindset, I think your team around you doesn't play for you the same. I think, you know, he doesn't get the respect because he hasn't earned it. He's kind of been anointed in his position. And it's not, you know, totally his fault. The team built it up that way. They put they gave up a ton of picks for a guy. And listen, if he would have hit, it would have been great. But not only is he missed, he's missed with the team and with the players that play around him. So I don't see it playing out well, favorable for him here. Maybe it's a fresh start for everybody. But I think at the end of the day, you've got the team side of it, and you also have the side of he struggles. He's not a pocket passer. I think Gruden found that out extremely early. I think he still, has more respect football wise for Cousins, and I think that was the biggest bust last year. The fact that he was just shaken. He threw a few interceptions and just completely, in that Philadelphia game, that was for him to take, and he just completely threw up on himself. I think that was the most shocking thing about last year. Not the RG3. I think that's been known. I think it is the way Cousins played. So I don't know. I think Gruden, he does survive it because I think more and more evidence is building up about RG3 just not being the person. And it wasn't a Shanahan thing, even though Shanahan just really mishandled everything. But it's more of, hey, this guy's just not it. And I think they're building the case for it. I think, our general manager's like seeing it. So I think he's taking first snaps to start off with, but it's his job to lose, and I think he will lose it. And that's the sad thing. I don't even know if the starting quarterbacks on the roster this year are on the team, you know, on the roster right now. But whoever it will be, I think they'll be starting over RG3.
Wow. Yeah, I'd never seen anything like that, the way that Jay was talking about Jay was talking about, sorry, I just got confused with John Gruden. Jay Gruden was just talking about RG3 in those press conferences. Just, you know, just he was so critical and so brutally honest about the things that RG3 was doing wrong. I loved it. I mean, it was like amazing to watch. It was like, oh, I wish more press conferences were like this, where they were just like, yeah, that guy's not playing right, and this is why.
Yeah.
Like, until he fixes these things, you know? And, yeah, great. Go ahead. Sorry.
And I really do think that was the first time he heard something like that, negative towards him out in the open. And he's a very sensitive guy, and I think that hurt. And so I don't think there's a recovery that way. I just think he's lost his mojo. He's a great read option, you know, in spurts type of quarterback, because that kept everyone on their heels, and he won't do it anymore. And I think that's, you know, that's a shame, because, you know, Russell Wilson in Seattle does the same stuff. I think they do same type of things, but it's you know, his willingness he's not a leader. And he's, you know, saying, hey, I'm not going to do this. Well, that's the kind of quarterback you are at the end of the day. You're not a pocket passer. You know, you can pass in the pocket on sparing occasions, and he thinks he's, you know, going to do it all the time. He's just, that's not him. You know, he's quoted as saying, you know, Aaron Rodgers, this. It's like, don't put yourself in that box, please.
Samuel, I have a question for you. So Spags, like, I love Spagnuolo. He's wonderful. He coached for us for a long time. And I really think when he left to go to the Giants, we really lost something in Philly. Soon after, Jim Johnson died, and I think he was a disciple of Jim's, and he does great work, just like Jim did with the blitzing and coming after quarterbacks. Tell me a little bit about that. How do you feel about him becoming the defensive coordinator there? Do you think he has the horses he once did when you won your Super Bowls? Just all about that.
You know, I love Spags. I think that what he did during the Super Bowl is, you know, compensating for the lack of a secondary by just having that NASCAR pass rush go after the quarterback was something that's being copied around the league with teams that, you know, if you can't have the players in the secondary, you better make sure you pressure the quarterback. But the real question is whether or not Spags is a great coach. That I have no questions about. The question is, does he have the players? Jason Pierre-Paul is great at times, but he'll disappear for games. George Selby is an athlete that they brought in. He can get after the quarterback. So, you know, those defensive ends aren't really anybody that I'm super excited about. We let Mathias Kiwanuka go after, you know, switching him from linebacker to defensive end every other season. So he's gone. But, you know, I hope one of our two defensive tackles, either Hankins, our third-year guy out of Ohio State, or Cullen Jenkins, can provide some pressure on the inside to give Spags what he needs. But I think however good these players are, Spags will get the most out of them, and he'll be able to hide what problems we have with our secondary.
Mark, I'm going to throw out a question to you. Certainly the LeSean McCoy trade made a lot of waves. I really like that move. I think getting a guy like Kiko Alonso and getting rid of McCoy's cap number was a great move for you guys. But then you turn around, spend that money on Ryan Matthews, and then spend a whole lot of money on DeMarco Murray, and he's a guy you've admitted is a downgrade from LeSean McCoy. So I just kind of want your take on what Philadelphia has done at the running back position this offseason.
I think the biggest thing it shows is just that Chip was not very happy with LeSean, unfortunately. I think it really comes down to LeSean being not a one-cut runner. He wants specifically that type of runner. And I think he wants runners that punish, which is not McCoy's thing. He would try to get around you rather than run through you. And so I think it really comes down to that. And I think the way he looks at it is that for the money he was going to pay McCoy, which is about $12 million this year, he got both DeMarco at $8 million, which I totally agree with you, is more than DeMarco is worth. I would have loved to have paid him $6 million. That would have been great. I think right around the same price tag you were looking at for DeMarco, I would have looked at and been very happy with. But given the circumstances, you know, they had to go with giving him the bigger money. I think that they like the idea that they had that leverage over Dallas, but I don't know if $2 million extra a year is worth that just to like dig it into Dallas a little bit and take their running back. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think what Chip would answer, and I have to trust him, is that for giving up McCoy, he was able to sign Matthews at $4 million and he was able to sign DeMarco at $8 million. And so for the same amount of money, he's got two backs. And they're more the style of back he would like. I think he knows that he runs more plays than anybody else, and he's got a very high chance of injury, especially with somebody like DeMarco. And so he just is trying to load up at least 3 or 4 deep so he can just keep pounding people, and if he loses horses, he'll keep running. We'll see, man. I love Shady. I think Shady is amazing. It will dramatically hurt my Madden game. I loved playing with him. And so, yeah, I'm bummed. You know what I mean? Like, I that's the only way I can say it. But I'm excited to see what Kiko Alonso can do. I don't think Shady's worth $12 million. Like, that's crazy. I don't want to pay any running back over $10 million. That's crazy. Even if they are the best in the league. So, yeah, that's kind of where I stand on that. To throw that right back at you, I'm curious just what do you feel about Adrian Peterson? What would you be willing to give up for Adrian Peterson in the sense of what resources if you had to trade for him? And then what is the price tag? What do you pay Adrian Peterson per year? I think you guys are sitting on right now like $12.3 million. Obviously, some of that money has to go towards signing free agents. Undrafted free agents and your rookies, your draft picks. But, you know, let's say 10, you know, yeah. How much of that $12 million are you willing to put towards Adrian Peterson, and how do you see that situation?
Well, it's funny. When Romo did that restructure to free up that money, everyone tried to connect the dots that the exact amount of money that we freed up from Romo is exactly what Adrian Peterson has on his contract for this year. And everyone thought, that's not why we made the move. As you said, it's to sign rookies, it's to sign undrafted free agents. A lot of that's to go to the bonuses for Greg Hardy because that's not base salary. His is in-game weekly bonuses. It would take a decent little restructure out of Adrian Peterson to come here. Now, again, he's admitted and been very forward about the fact he wants to play in Dallas. He would like to play in Texas. He's going to have to restructure that down close to where DeMarco is right now. I think $8, $9 million is the max that we can really consider paying to Adrian Peterson. And then you think on top of that, we're going to have to give up a draft pick or two very high to Minnesota to make that deal work. I'm not about giving them that 27th overall pick. I want to keep that first round pick. If we can package some deal starting with the second, that'd be a little more feasible to me. But I don't want to see them giving up a one for Adrian Peterson, who's 30 years old. He does have a year less of wear and tear because of sitting out last year, but I want him to be kind of conservative with this. Adrian Peterson's going to have to give up a little bit in terms of money to make a move here happen. I know Arizona is also interested in making that move happen, so they might drive the price up that Minnesota is asking for. So I don't want to see him breaking the bank for Adrian. I'd like to see him here. I'd love to see him here running behind that line. There's no telling what kind of numbers he could put up. And certainly while the window is open with Tony Romo for the next, I'd say about 2-3 years, where they really need to just go for it. I'd love to see that move, but only if it fits into the vision that Jerry and Steven have really been putting forth this year about being responsible with the cap and not getting that cap hell that we talked about.
I've got one for you, Mark.
Uh-huh.
I've got to know about the Johnny Manziel rumors, how you would feel about that. Johnny Manziel.
No, that's totally ridiculous. It's never going to happen. The only way I see some crazy thing with the Browns and their double picks in the first round is that we do something to go up and get Mariota. I don't think Mariota falls. We'll see. If he falls somewhere around 10, I could see some wacky, you know, six-way trade. Who knows? NBA style, we go get him. But I don't think it's going to happen. I don't want Manziel anywhere near my team. That's ridiculous. I mean, he's not full. He may be, if Tebow is like the little angel, right? Maybe he's like the little devil, like joke quarterback. We just now have both sets of the pair. But I mean, I don't think he's ready for the NFL. When I watched him in college, it was like watching somebody in Madden, right, where you've taken the smallest guy and given him these crazy ratings that you can do. It was like, this guy will never make it in the NFL. You can't make ever – it's like when you're playing Madden and somebody is able to pull off some crazy play on every single third or fourth down, and you're just like, you're not good. You're just getting really lucky over and over again. It drives me crazy. So, no, I don't want anything to do with him. And to be perfectly honest, I think it's a total joke just because of Chip Kelly's if you look at everyone he's bringing in, they're like total Boy Scouts. He just wants guys who are super clean, blue collar, like gonna do their work, not complain, not get flashy. Like that's clearly the guys he's bringing in. And I think Johnny's kind of the antithesis of that. So no, I don't think that's gonna happen. And man, I once again, how dare you say that, Drew? I don't want you to wish that on my team. That's evil. That's evil, dude.
I feel like somewhere Ray Farmar is out there on a street corner just begging somebody to take Johnny Manziel off his hand, pleading with them. I know, right? There's a video floating around the internet from last year's draft of me watching the Cowboys make their first round pick, begging and pleading on my hands and knees, praying they would not take Johnny Manziel, and the utter relief on my face when they said Zach Martin and said any name but Johnny Manziel just touched all over me. I feel sorry for the Browns.
So good.
Good luck with that.
That would have been the best thing ever. I was hoping so bad. There's a joke. Jimmy Kemsky is a beat writer for the Eagles, and he jokes that, like, you always know with Dallas, if it's a good pick or a bad pick, if Jerry looks all disappointed, it's like, oh, no, some scout got what they wanted. It's a good pick. And if you see Jerry all celebrating, it's like, oh, sweet, awesome, awesome, we're set. They pick some fast wide receiver who's never played football. That was a great pick. I think Zach Martin might have been the best pick in the first round last year. I mean, one of them, one of the top five picks, probably. Very impressive.
All pro in his rookie year. You can't beat that. Not at all.
No. I would take him in a second, man. That was a great pick. So, guys, to wrap up, what's the final thing I'd love to do is just guess your teams. What is your team's total record? Like, give me your win-loss for the end of this year, end of 2015. And then if you can just real quick rank our division. Tell me where we're going to finish. You don't have to give everyone's win, rent, loss. Just where are we going to rank in this division this year? I'll go around to each of you. Let's start with Drew. Where are the Redskins going to be this year, and how do you rank this division?
Our division's still weak. I think it's gotten better. I think the NFC West has gone down some. I think San Francisco's had a dramatic fall from grace. If they want to call it grace, because they still didn't win a Super Bowl and could get over a team in their division. But, hey, I'm sure they're very excited about where their team's going. I think the NFC South is going to be good. I think that's going to be strong still. I think that's going to be a battle there. But, you know, for the Redskins and I guess the NFC East, I think we're probably slated kind of middle of the range. It's not what it used to be, but there's – some teams, and hopefully the Redskins being one of them that improves dramatically. We had four wins last year. You got to go up. You had three wins the year before. I think if for whatever miracle they went 8-8, that would be a great year. I don't look for it. I look for a 6-win season, maybe 7 at most, and Redskins finish last in the division.
Wow. Thank you. That's awesome. Very honest. Very honest. let's check out Brian. Tell me about the Cowboys. Oh, go ahead. What were you saying, Drew?
I felt like I just revealed my inner soul. confession there.
What do you think, Brian? What are the Cowboys going to do this year?
Well, I think last year, the expectations here were very low. We were just trying to finish 500. And to go 12-4, we caught a lot of teams off guard. And that's something we're not going to be able to do this year. So we're going to come back to the pack a little bit. I think 10-6 is very doable. I do think we win the division again. I think the Eagles are behind us, but I think the Giants are real close to the Eagles. The Giants are the team, probably more so than Philadelphia, because of all the weapons they have on offense, kind of scares me. So if they can get some of those line issues ironed out, I think they're the surprise team, but I still have them finishing just behind Philadelphia. And yes, Drew, Washington is still going to be in the cellar, unfortunately, this year. 5 wins, possibly. It's going to be a rough one for them.
yes, I agree with you on a lot of those things. I do think the Eagles, I think we have a chance to go 11-5. The only reason I say that is we have a very easy schedule this year. The big difference between our schedule and your schedule is that you guys have to go and play Seattle at home and play Green Bay in Green Bay. And those are tough, tall orders. Otherwise, I think you guys, we would be right neck and neck. I'm hoping we pull out a little bit ahead, 11-5, and take the division. I don't think we get a bye or anything. And then, yeah, I think that the order is the same. I think below us is definitely Giants, Redskins. I think that I agree with you completely. The Giants are the team that I think threatens and has a high chance to come up and pass either of us. Who knows? I will respect Eli and Coughlin, you know, as the Super Bowl winners that they are until they both retire, which hopefully will be soon. Finally, yes, with the Giants, Samuel, what do you think?
For the Giants, I kind of see a 9-7, 10-6 season, outside chance at 11-5. Hopefully we can get a wild card spot and do our Giants thing and win the Super Bowl from there, from the sixth spot. That's our specialty. But I think it really just comes down to how well that offensive line plays. If they can get Eli anytime, I think Odell Beckham just goes off again. It's going to be a big difference now that teams have an offseason to scout him. But if you watch those games at the end of the season, he was getting double and triple teamed, and he found a way to get open. So, you know, hopefully with Victor Cruz back, with Bareed, you know, take some pressure off of him. I think that offense can really score, you know, another year to buy into Bob McAdoo's system. If I had to put my life on it, it's probably going to be a 9-7 season. But hopefully we can get a sneak out another win or two and get a wild card spot. As much as it pains me to say it, I do think the Cowboys take the division. I just think that offensive line, whatever issues they have on that offense, will get worked out as long as Romo can stay healthy. That being said, the Eagles, I think, finished third. I just think that that quarterback situation is too murky for me. Sam Bradford, I don't think, is the answer. I didn't get that trade. I'm sure that was spoken about before I got on the call, but I think they finished third. I think the Giants and Eagles are right about the same place. I think Shirtelli's next. Coach, I think he can the style of play and how good he is covers up a lot of the holes. The Redskins, sorry, I just think they're at the bottom of the division. And you know, hopefully we can make runs for a wild card spot this year. I think they, as a whole, the NFC is a little bit down. So you know, hopefully 9-7, 10-6 gets us a spot in the playoffs.
Awesome, guys. Awesome, awesome. Great. Thank you guys so much. I think this was an awesome first show for the NFC East. Hopefully we'll be having some more soon. Keep an eye out. We'll be having them. We record every Saturday and midweek, so you should be hearing two podcasts a week. You can reach out to us at Twitter. We are at NFU Podcast. Gmail, you can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And on Facebook, we are NFU Podcast. Facebook.com/NFU podcast. Please follow us. Look us up. We are putting out, like I said, two podcasts a week. We are Next Fan Up, a podcast by the Superfans, hosted usually by Pod Vader, although I'm stepping in today, Mark Sicko, to cover for him. He does all the Saturday recordings, and we swap off on the rest. Please join us in the future. Thank you guys all for being on today. Yeah, we'll be in touch. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck, gents.
Go Cowboys.